Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
Well, good morning. This is Carmen LaBurge. Today is the day the Lord has made. We are seeking to rejoice and be glad in it. There are many of you in our live listening broadcast area across Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, North Dakota, Missouri, Nebraska. Did I say South Dakota? Folks who are either already experiencing flooding in your communities or preparing for rivers to crest and for snow to thaw and for rivers to then exceed their banks and for farmland to be flooded, on and on and on. And so if you are listening today via streaming at myfaithradio.com, or if you maybe you're listening via the podcast or via the app somewhere else around the world, please be praying for folks in our live listening area who are really in real desperate need of water not going where it should not go. We as human beings try to create all kinds of barriers and boundaries, and then we recognize that water has a power all its own, and it obviously seeps into places where we would prefer it not be, and it often overflows the boundaries that we try to set for it. And so let's not just be praying. Let's be out there loading sandbags if we're in proximity to people who are in need, and let's be ready to help. Ready to help when the floods come, when the waters rise. Let's be willing to offer empty rooms in our own homes, and certainly prepare the hospitality for those who are going to be in need. And then, yeah, let's get ourselves ready to respond after the waters recede, to help people clean up, because there's really, fires and floods are, fires, floods, tornadoes. I really don't have a what's worse than what list. They're all bad. If you are in the affected region and you would like to communicate with us so that we can be praying for you specifically, you can text me at 877-933-2484. You can call that number anytime and leave a voicemail for us about what you're facing so that we can lift you up in prayer. Again, the number is 877-933-2484. You can always email me, carmen@myfaithradio.com. We'd like to feature a conversation here on air in the next couple of days with somebody who's in the affected region and can tell us how folks are responding and how ministries are on the ground actually rendering aid and helping. So if you are connected in that way in one of these communities that's affected by the flooding, please let us know. Again, the number is 877-933-2484, or you can email me, carmen@myfaithradio.com. Right when we come back, Dr. Linda Mental will be here again. She and I are going to talk about a piece she has posted at beliefnet.com about body image. And then we're going to talk about maybe you are in a place where kids excused themselves from school on Friday, and they were doing so because they are experiencing terror related to climate change. Linda and I are going to talk about young people today and the things that they are thinking and how we can help them think better about those things. All of that up in just a moment on Mornings with Carmen.
This is my fight song. Take back my life.
Dr. Linda Mental, welcome back.
Hey, it's great to be here. And I just want to say, when you were talking about all the flooding, Carmen, that I had relatives for years in North Dakota and Fargo. And when this happens, they lived right off of the Red River, and they had so many problems with flooding, and they were sandbagging, and their neighbors got in to help, and the church got in to help. And it really is quite a difficult time for those families. So I'm glad you brought it up. And I trust that everybody that's listening will pray for people and reach out and help like you suggested.
Well, and our friends in the Fargo, Moorhead area who listen to us on FM 102 and AM 1200, I know that it's not flooding there yet, but what word is that, wow, as we look down the calendar a little bit, they are probably headed into some pretty severe flooding again this year. So I want to just continue to be praying and ready to respond. So, Linda, your website is drlindamental.com, and you have all kinds of great stuff there posted for folks. And one of the things that we get there is a link not only to your Saturday show here on Faith Radio at 10:30 a.m., but we also get links to really great blogs that you've posted, like this one that I was referencing related to body image. Talk with us about what our body image is. Like, first of all, define that. Like, what's a body image versus, like, a body reality?
Yeah, so it's the way you perceive your body. So it's your idea, your image of when you look in the mirror, what you think about how you look. And I thought it was really interesting. I had posted that blog, and then this past week, singer Sam Smith, who is very well known, popular pop singer, came out with an interview and wrote about the fact that when he was 12 years old, now this is a 12-year-old whose body is not even, you know, beginning to be formed. It's just beginning. You're in the stages of puberty. You don't really know what your adult body is going to look like at that point. He talked about having liposuction at the age of 12 and that it really didn't do much. And then after the liposuction, the fat distribution came back because of his developing body. And he was talking about how he has disliked his body for most of his life. So I thought it was really interesting that somebody was bringing attention to this fact, because it is something, I mean, in the world of floods and tornadoes and shootings and all kinds of difficult things, we don't always think about that some people are struggling privately with things that create a lot of stress for them and a lot of problems. And if you don't like your body, if you think that your body is ugly or it's fat or you don't look like you don't like the way it's shaped or proportioned, it can create stress for people. And so having a healthy body image is really important.
So let's talk about a healthy body image and the intersection with actual health. Because we can, right? We could be really unhealthy and have a very positive body image, and that's not a good thing either.
Yeah, that's what usually that relates to having an eating disorder, where you're doing things to your body by, you know, that's trying to starve it and trying to look like all of these images that we see in the media. So I always remind people that the average American woman is 5'4" and weighs 144 pounds. Most of what you see are pictures of supermodels and images that have been altered in a lot of ways through photoshopping and lighting and all kinds of things that they do with computers, that what you're looking at mostly is somebody who's about 5'10 and weighs 110 pounds. So we look at these images and they're repeated and they bombard us on an everyday basis. And it leads us to think that this is how we're supposed to look. And so there are a number of women, and more so now men, that are engaging in plastic surgery and unhealthy eating habits like restricting food and binging and purging. And then a lot of people will use caffeine or they'll begin to smoke as a way to lose weight. So you can develop a lot of unhealthy habits in an effort to try to reach this cultural prescription of beauty, which is very difficult to reach for most of us. It's not the way our bodies are designed. No matter how well we take care of ourselves, it doesn't matter what I do, Carmen, I'm not going to look like a supermodel. I've given it up. It's not going to happen.
Well, and I think that the Sam Smith story is so helpful in this conversation, because we do have him being celebrated as a person who, you know, has, I don't know, gone through, achieved what's, you know, described online as an insane body transformation. He's, you know, he's acknowledged as, like, you know, this hottie superstar, and pictures of him when he is younger are referred to as, you know, as chubby or average, or, you know, this average kid has now become this, you know, chiseled star. And so I think part of this, Linda, is the challenge that we face is just in the culture. I mean, in this Instagram era, how do teenagers in particular, young adults and teenagers, how do they present themselves as really who they are in a culture that is just frankly so image driven?
Yeah, and it's cruel when your image isn't perfect on Instagram. So a lot of teenagers struggle with that. They don't want to post anything unless they've spent, you know, a lot of time editing it and photoshopping it and getting it just right, because the bullying that can happen online from an image is pretty intense as well. So there's a lot of pressure, and there's a lot of pressure from sometimes their family members and parents about their body. So parents who are making fun of their children for being overweight or teasing them about being overweight. And you would be surprised at the number of fathers who say things to their daughters that are maybe they seem like they're not that big of a deal, but the daughter really hangs on to that message. And I've had 40-year-olds talk about the messages that they were given from their fathers about their bodies when they were in sort of a normal sort of chunky period. When you're moving from into puberty, sometimes those comments can really stay with a child and really has a lot to do with feeling less than. And then, of course, the peers in their schools and stuff like we're talking about, with constantly making comments about the way people look. So it is very, very difficult for kids to just resist those pressures, because they're all around us. So there's a couple things kids can do. They can really try to focus on the parts of their body that they do like and not get all focused on the one thing that might not be perfect. And if you can get kids talking about, you know, nobody's perfect, nobody looks like those people in the images. A lot of times I will show them videos. The Dove organization has some great videos online that you can show your kids that show them how altered all the images that they see are in media and how unreal they are. And sometimes that helps them say, oh, you know, I could look like that if I had all that altering as well. But that's not how people look in real life. And sometimes for some kids, parents really need to maybe have them take a little bit of a fast on social media and not be on those sites as much, because we know that the more you're on those sites, the more difficulty you have with improving your mood. And then, you know, get in a friend group where they're not constantly focusing on these things. My daughter was a dancer all her life, and she was in a group where they were very body image focused. And every time the conversation would go to body image, she would shift the conversation to something that was more about the person's personality, something about their smile or the way that they were so kind to people. And she learned quickly how to shift conversations away from that. Because really, as someone of faith, we need to be spending much more time on the things that are eternal in our lives and not so much about the outward appearance. Even Jesus spoke about that. You don't judge people by their outward appearance. You judge them by the state of their heart and what's going on with their heart. So that's the kinds of things that we want to really address with kids.
Dr. Linda Mental, we will continue this conversation in just a moment. You can check out what she's doing at drlindamental.com. We'll be right back. We are talking about relationships. We're talking about the relationship that we have with our own body and those around us in community. Linda, I'd love to expand the conversation a little bit to the relationship that we have as adults to young people in the culture, and particularly in relationship to the way young people are feeling about climate change and other issues, and the way they're feeling about those things differently than maybe some of us who are a little bit older. And I don't want to in any way diminish the enthusiasm and energy of young people who skipped school on Friday in protest around the globe of the failure of governments to respond to climate change in the way these young people would want them to or have them to. But I would like for you to respond to some of the news coverage, if you would, because I'm reading headlines like "The Terror of Climate Change is Transforming Young People's Identity." Like I'm reading people who are saying that walking out of school to protest climate change this last Friday is an expression of what they're calling existential whiplash. Like, this seems to be are these just headlines that are attention grabbing, or is there really some sort of trauma that we are inflicting upon the next generation by not responding to climate change in the way that they would prefer we respond?
Yeah, I think this is really a tough topic, because one of the issues is that we know that we want to steward the earth, right? God put
Amen.
Us on the earth. He put us in the garden. He told us to have dominion over the earth. And we're supposed to be good stewards of the earth. So there is a biblical concept there that is very important. But one of the things that really is concerning to me, and I go back and forth, I try to keep a little bit up on the science behind all of this, and the science isn't really supporting this, in my opinion. It's just my opinion after reading certain things. It isn't really supporting this crises that everybody is making it out to be. Now, certainly the more crowded we get, the more, you know, problematic we are with not stewarding the earth. It creates problems in communities. But these general, you know, angst that is out there in the headlines that you are reading, I do really think that these are politically motivated to encapture a generation of millennials into a voting group. And I don't like when they use the science to try to manipulate something like that, because the science just doesn't support, to me, this type of terrible response that we're all doomed and the earth is gonna go up in, you know, flames. It's gonna go up in flames because of the biblical concept that when Jesus comes back and he destroys the earth. That's the bigger eternal issue that young people should be concerned about. You know, if you don't have Christ in your heart, what is going to happen to you on a long-term basis? And we never want to scare kids into the gospel, so I'm not suggesting that either. But the emphasis is misplaced in my mind. I think it's great to get people more aware, to get kids active in taking care of their environment, to do things socially in communities, to make, you know, to have cleanup days, to have people be more aware of things like trash, what they do with their trash. All those kinds of things are great. Car emissions, trying to be active in legislation that does maybe make communities safer. Certainly we had lead problems in the early days. We took care of that. Those things are very important. Asbestos, I'm thinking of a lot of things that have come up. But to terrorize kids like this and say, make this something that they're worried about on an everyday basis, to me, it's just very inappropriate. There's no need to get them concerned, because, Carmen, what can one child do in their community if they're feeling like there's doom and gloom all the time? How's that going to help them move forward? It would be better just to have good community active strategies of what you can do to be really interested in the environment and to help take care of it, rather than, you know, making this something that is going to worry you to the point of bothering your identity or making you stressed out. We have a lot of other things in life. People should be talking more about what happens in childhood to kids when there's broken families and there's addiction and there's other problems that significantly influence a person's life for the here and now.
Mm. Yeah, I was clearly aware that there's definitely some transference in terms of the concerns of particular adults, or concerns or deflecting of concerns from other causal factors that might be influencing these particular young people. As I was reading through the articles related to last Friday's school walkout. So I think we will continue this conversation in the future, Linda. How about you and I just commit to both reading more about these particular students, not just here in the United States, but around the world, who are attaching their sense of self or their sense of identity and their sense of the future existence to specifically to an issue. And because I think it's going to be helpful to talk about going forward, equipping Christian families to talk about self and identity and existence, you know, in other ways.
And I think one of the things that we're the bigger picture of all of this is every generation wants to have meaning in something and purpose attached to it. So you look at past generations. There was actually a great article on this, I think, in The Atlantic years ago, where every generation sort of had a cause. So it was Vietnam for one generation. It was, you know, different wars for another generation. It was materialism for the 80s. It was there's all these different causes that a generation hangs on to. And And this is one of the causes of this generation of, you know, taking care of the earth and being a good steward of the earth. And people want something that they can hook onto. And I think in a culture where we constantly take God out of the picture and we're not having a spiritual purpose and calling and meaning in our lives, it's easy to put something else in there because people long for something to be a part of that's bigger than themselves, that can make them feel like they have purpose and meaning in whatever they do. And I do believe that that's probably what's behind the drive, and it's focusing that on something that young people can say, I can pick that up, I can find meaning in this, I can do something, I can be an advocate. I think the same thing has happened a lot with social justice, where so many young people, rightfully so, are concerned about social justice. They're looking for issues that they can hang their hat on and that can give them some purpose and meaning and make their generation have an impact. So that may be a part of this as well.
I love that observation. Dr. Linda Mental, thank you so much for joining us again today. I look forward to our next conversation.
All right. Take care. Have a great week.
Thanks so much. You too. Let's have our cause be Christ today. Whatever else you're up to, let your cause be Christ. We'll be right back. So I love the listener. I love the listeners out there who do respond to the invitation to text and to email. So let me just respond to a few folks who have texted in during this morning's conversation. We've got a friend in the Minneapolis-St. Paul listening area who is concerned that we have not heard anything about the massacre of Christians in Nigeria over the last week. Actually, in case you missed that, we actually talked about that with Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News, who was on the program earlier today in the second half of the first hour. So please go back and check out that audio. It'll be posted later today at myfaithradio.com as a podcast. We did talk about the Fulani militia in Nigeria that's basically replacing Boko Haram in terms of the violence there against Christians. We talked about persecution.com and the voice of the martyrs and encouraged people to check out what's happening at Open Doors as well. So we share that concern with you. Absolutely. A listener responding to the conversation that I was just having with Dr. Linda Mental about body image, encouraging all of us to be healthy, to exercise and stay flexible, not focus on how we look, but in terms of the endurance of our bodies. After our bodies need to last. Absolutely. Our bodies need to last the duration. So as a part of that, I'll just invite everybody to be praying for my stepdad. His name is Ron. He's 85, and he's now dealing with some degenerative issues related to his bones. And so he's frustrated by that, and he's in some pain. And so I just appreciate your prayers for that. And then we've heard from Valentine Royal, and she's got a coworker who is Native American. Her Native American coworker is asking for prayers and help related to floods in Native American reservations in the affected areas that we talked about at the opening of the hour. And so if you know of folks on reservations, or you are in reach of a reservation, be sure that those folks are not forgotten in the midst of all of this as well when you are responding to neighbors in need. Next up, David Aikman, editor of Godspeed Magazine. He and I are going to do some international news headlines.
Whether you're admitting it to a spouse, a friend, or a coworker, they're two of the hardest words you'll ever say. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Two words. I'm sorry. Apologizing is never easy, especially when we're apologizing to a child. But the truth is, even parents make mistakes. And admitting fault is a necessary step to restoring a damaged relationship. So where do you start? Well, the simplest way to begin the conversation with your son or daughter is to admit where you've been wrong, and then discuss your idea for preventing them in the future. By sharing your own failures, you set the stage for a renewed relationship, and might just give your teen the motivation she needs to do the same. Is it time to say those two words?
Looking for more parenting wisdom? Go online to ParentingTodaysTeens.org or search for Parenting Today's Teens in your favorite app store.
My name is Bond, James Bond.
Dr. Aikman, welcome back.
Carmen, thank you. It's so nice to be on your program again.
It's always wonderful to talk with you. Could we start our conversation today with President Trump's national emergency, his very first veto, and now right. conversations about Congress seeking to have a veto-proof, like, right? They want to now have overturn the veto, right? By having a massive majority. Okay, so tell us, for those of us who aren't as good a student of history as you are, help us understand where we are as a people over here on this side of the pond in relationship to this issue.
Well, vetoes by presidents are things that have been practiced by several presidents over the years, and sometimes they're overturned by the House and the Senate acting together, and sometimes they're not. Of course, the issue is whether the Senate has enough votes to overturn this veto, and the chances are they don't. And so, therefore, Trump's veto of the bill that wanted to change his national emergency action will probably stand. Whether the Senate and the House will agree on changing the formula of the majority needed to overturn a veto, it's not clear, but there's obviously going to be some discussion of whether the rules should be changed.
So for folks who've missed it, on Friday, the president did issue his first veto after Congress rejected his national emergency declaration in relationship to what's happening on the southern border of the United States. And it was based on the National Emergencies Act of 1976. And I suspect now that what we are going to see is Congress moving in the direction of trying to reclaim power that it delegated in that act and seeking to change the National Emergencies Act of 1976 to limit the president's power, this president and future presidents, power to do things that really should be within the purview of Congress. Does that sound about right?
Yes, that is correct. I mean, it's the constant shifting of the forces on the side of the executive branch, whichever president is in office, and the legislative branch. And this kind of imbalance or this kind of dueling between the two sides of government is likely to continue, I would say, indefinitely, because on the one hand, most Americans are comfortable with a Congress, namely Senate and House, which can counterbalance the actions of the president. And we're not a country, the United States is not a country that sits comfortably with a monopolistic control of White House, Senate, and House of Representatives. On the whole, that has not been the most popular arrangement over the years.
Well, agreed. So, David, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, will you tell us what you know about New Zealand? I suspect that you've been there and you can give us a sense of that country. Could we do that when we come back?
Absolutely. I'd be very happy.
Wonderful. Wonderful. All right. This is Carmen LaBerge. I'll be right back with Dr. David Aikman from Godspeed Magazine and, well, a history with time. There you go. So, David, let's talk about New Zealand. Let's start by just tell us about New Zealand.
Well, it's a wonderful country of beautiful scenic locations in both the North Island and the South Island. It's inhabited only by 5 million people. And although the land area is probably the size of the UK, the actual population ratio to the square miles of the place is very, very slight. So It's a very pleasant rural country with spectacular scenery and a population that has over the years generally been accepted as very benevolent, extremely active in sports, especially the sport of rugby, and delightful people to have around, and not at all famous for any right-wing or nationalist or white supremacy ideology. So this is a brand new occurrence in that country's history, and a very sad one.
So talk with us a little bit. I think that for many of us in the United States, what we know about New Zealand in terms of immigration is that you can kind of, the dysphemistic way of saying it would say you could buy your way in. The euphemistic way would say you can invest your way in. I mean, they advertise that for $2.15 million U.S. dollars, you can invest your way in and move to New Zealand. So, they have really strict immigration in terms of people moving there. You have to be financially able. You have to be able to bring something to their country that they want. However, they also have very wide open doors for refugees. Talk about that mix of people in maybe the last handful of years.
Well, the country has been very hospitable to refugees from the Middle East and South Asia, who don't always get a welcome in neighboring Australia and often don't get a welcome in parts of Europe or even in the United States. So it's become widely respected amongst would-be immigrants as a tolerant and accepting country. And that's why there are quite a large number of people of South Asian and Middle Eastern background living in New Zealand. But of course, what we have to do to think about this particular shooting situation is that the shooter, or the alleged shooter, because it hasn't been proved yet, was an Australian who had been deeply stirred by resentments expressed in Europe about the seeming overwhelming influx of people of Islamic background and the occurrence of Islamist shootings and stabbings of Europeans. And so he, in a sense, was reacting the same way Christians in the 10th and 11th centuries reacted to what had been happening in the Arab Muslim-controlled areas of the Middle East, which hitherto had been Christian. So it's really a response to a perception of aggression and, immigration, invasion by immigration is one way you could call it. So he was reacting to that. He's widely read in various right-wing, white supremacist sites in Europe and the United States. And I think what we're seeing is a resurgence, a very unpleasant resurgence of a tribalism, which is pitting Muslim immigrants, some of whom are indeed quite militant and quite active, against the dominant population of white Europeans and Americans, feeling that they have to respond to prevent being completely overrun by what they think is an unhealthy demographic imbalance in their societies and cultures.
So, David, I wonder if other people were struck, as I have been struck, by the very name of this part of New Zealand, which is Christchurch. And yet, in New Zealand, I'm certainly aware that over the last 20 or more years, there's been a really precipitous decline in terms of the percentage of people in New Zealand who continue to affiliate with any variety of the Christian church. But a dramatic rise in the percentage of people in New Zealand who are actually offended if you ask them about their faith. Talk with us about the changing religious climate in this country, in the country of New Zealand.
Yes, New Zealand used to have a reputation for being the country of the world that had the highest percentage of missionaries relative to its overall population of any country in the world. And that was true at least up to about 40 years ago. In fact, the best man at my wedding in the Philippines was a New Zealander, actually from Christchurch. And although I hadn't been to Christchurch when my wedding took place, I have been since then. And it is a delightful, beautiful city with, to my recollection, this goes back about 20 years, a very friendly, tolerant, urbane population. But as you point out, Carmen, there has been a massive secularization, which usually leads to a real hostility towards people of faith, which is something you see in Europe, certainly in the UK, and you even see it in Ireland. So there's this real switch around in who the people being considered outsiders now are. On the whole, it's considered committed Christians who are outsiders. And the fact that in Britain, the Prime Minister is regularly seen on a Sunday basis going to her church is quite exceptional for any British politician. I personally think it's a great, very good sign. But you have put your finger on it. It's a rapidly secularizing culture in New Zealand. And as a result, the demographic situation has moved strongly towards the influx of Muslims.
So, David, I have not managed our conversational time very well. So you and I are going to have to do a Brexit update next week because
all right.
I've run us out of time today.
Okay, well, don't worry. There's going to be enough time to discuss Brexit, hopefully for the next 3 months, but pessimistically for the next 5 years.
Oh, David Aikman, we so appreciate our conversations with you each and every week. David is the editor of Godspeed Magazine. Thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you so much, Carmen. Have a wonderful week.
And you as well. So whatever you are facing today, let me encourage you to face it with faith. So I've been rereading a portion of Growing With, and if you missed that conversation, I'd encourage you to go back and grab it. It would be easy to find by typing Growing With into the search bar at myfaithradio.com. The reason I'm circling back around to it is I was pretty sure that I missed some things the first time that I read it. And one of the things that the book talks about is faith as a verb. So we often think about faith as a noun, as something that we have received, something that is, we either have it or we don't have it. It can be, you know, well, some people would argue it can be lost, but it certainly can be gained. And what's argued in the book is faith is also a verb, and I am faithing every day. And so how is your faithing going today might be an interesting conversation for you and I to have. And so you're out, as you are out there living as a person of faith, active in the faith, actively faithing, let me encourage you to face the world today with faith. Face every conversation with faith. Face every question or decision that lies in front of you. Face it with faith. And specifically, with faith in our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. So what does it look like for me to not only put my faith in Christ, but to actively walk that faith out into the world that he so loves? Because there are times I don't really particularly feel like I love the world, but Jesus does love the world. And Jesus has his heart set on every single person that you and I are going to encounter today. And so whoever is before you, I would invite you to see that person through the eyes of Jesus Christ and with the heart of the Father who is sending you into that person's life, into their path, and he is sending you as a person of faith to share the faith with another. So I want you to have a great day and God bless, and I'll see you right back here tomorrow on Mornings with Carmen. In the meantime, visit us online at myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.